This session is part of a webinar series which aims to assist researchers, librarians, and institutions in the adoption of digital tools and persistent identifiers for a significant increase of research discoverability globally and to increase efficiency in scholarly workflows.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to today's webinar. Just a little introduction before we start. This event is sponsored by the ORCID Global Participation Fund, and it is organized by Ubuntu Net Alliance and Access to Perspectives as the managers and the founders of Africa Archive, respectively. For the sake of those maybe who are new to this space, Africa Archive is an open access repository for African research output. Yeah, it is a platform where African researchers can share their research output, including preprints, conference papers and posters, scholarly works across multiple disciplines. Through the management of Ubuntu Net Alliance, we hope that we can align the platform perfectly or at least as close as possible to African researchers' needs, managing the Africa Archive platform. Additionally, the aim is to provide a solution that, you know, makes it possible for African research to also be to reside on the African continent. So that's a good option to have. Now that Ubuntu Alliance manages the platform and hosts the platform, that is also now possible. So maybe just to get a feel of what I just talked about, Africa Archive and also the Africa Archive repository itself, which is still in its development phase, but then, you know, the integrations of persistent identifiers such as ORCID, such as DOIs have already been made. And, you know, soon it will go public to the extent that individual researchers and institutions can also create their repositories on it. But to get a feel, can I ask Ebuka if you can just share the links in the chat so that people can get a feel of the Africa Archive repository and also the website itself. Yes.
Okay, thank you, Arun.
Yes, thank you very much. So today's webinar is part of a webinar series that is being carried out to expose African researchers to how selected scholarly services work to increase the discoverability of African research in the global scholarly landscape. So this will be achieved by focusing on the transformative impact of persistent identifiers, which serve as unique and enduring labels assigned to digital objects. You know, these include resources, entities, and what have you. Just as well, persistent identifiers can also be assigned to individual researchers. That's the case with ORCID or ORCID, and also they can be assigned to research institutions, which is the case for ROR or ROR. So in this webinar, we shall focus on the topic enabling global reach and discoverability of African research data. My name is Harold Boa. I am the Business Development Officer at Ubuntu Net Alliance, and I will be the moderator. So without further ado, let's meet our speakers who shall help us interrogate the topic which I just mentioned. They are both from Figshare, which I am sure they will be able to introduce far much better than I ever would. So yes, without further ado, we have Mark Hanel, who is the founder of Figshare, which he created whilst completing his PhD in stem cell biology at Imperial College in London. Figshare currently provides research data infrastructure and for institutions, publishers, and funders globally. He is passionate about open science and the potential it has to revolutionize the research community. It's a pleasure to have you, Mark. And also, we have a former academic librarian and currently partnership development manager at Figshare, who is Maria Cotera. She supports open science and is responsible. I mean, open science and responsible research by developing strategic relationships, which bring Figshare's data and international repositories to universities and research institutions across Africa. Also the Middle East, Southern and Eastern Europe as well. And likewise, we are also very happy to have you here, Maria. So yes, with that being said, I think Mark, yeah, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Harold. Thank you, everybody, for joining. I am going to share my screen and hopefully everything will be working wonderfully. Looks like it is. Thank you very much. I will be talking and then Maria will be talking. And we're going to try and keep it entertaining, keep it interesting. Research data is a new thing in the academic space. I mean, it's not new in the sense that researchers have been generating data for a long time, but the tools being available in order to publish this data and publish all different types of content are relatively new. So new, in fact, that when I was finishing up my PhD, I decided to build a tool because I couldn't find one elsewhere. So I'm going to start with that. As I say, I'll try and keep it entertaining in the form of a story. How Figshare got started, it's all I know how to talk about. So I'll talk from the Figshare perspective. But then we can talk more about repositories as a core service to enable discoverability, Figshare's initiatives in Africa, our integrations with PIDs and built-in integrations, and what the future looks like, right? So why should you care? Why is this important? What are you going to take away from this this presentation today? And I think there is a lot of different things that academics have to be thinking about now. The move to open access, open data. Do I need an ORCID? What are all these acronyms? And who's going to help me do it? And I think the library world is very powerful in that space. I think that is where a lot of the expertise lives. So let's crack on and see how we go. So as I mentioned, I did, as Harold mentioned for me, I did my PhD in stem cell biology. And during that time, I had a lot of files that I generated that were videos of stem cells moving from one side of the screen to the other. And so when I wrote a paper, I'd say, as you can see in the video, the red stem cells move faster than the blue stem cells, right? I was trying to get them to move. And I went to publish this paper and they said, sorry, we don't accept video files as part of the publication. And I was disappointed for two reasons. One, I would then have to write all of these paragraphs of text saying the red cells are moving at this speed and the blue cells are moving. Whereas if you could just play the video, you could see that. And the other thing that annoyed me was I'd spent my whole weekend making these videos and they just were never going to get shared anywhere. So I was a hacky coder at best and I thought, why don't I just start publishing these videos and data sets and all of this other stuff from my research that will never see the light of day, you know, and someone's paid for that research. It should be made available. So this was the first version of Figshare that I built. I made it for myself and then I opened it up to allow other people to upload content. As you can see, I'm not a designer. I've had a lot of people say to me since that my color scheme was pretty tough on the eyes, but you know, publish all your data, try and make all of your research outputs available. So I was able to publish my 5 megabyte data set. As I said, I opened it up to other people and got some investment from Digital Science and allowed us to build out this infrastructure. And more importantly, I could hire professional developers to build the platform to allow more people to make their data openly available. So we have this platform. Figshare.com is a free platform where anyone can come along, upload their files, add some metadata and publish it. And just like you can do it for data sets, you can do it for videos, you can do it for posters, you can do it for presentations. Like this one will be made available through the Africa Archive, which runs Figshare infrastructure. And what it was was right place, right time. A lot of the funders globally are saying you should be making all of your research outputs available. A lot of the researchers are struggling with this idea of why can't I make all of my research outputs available? And it also had this concept that the publication is the king or queen. The publication is always going to be the context around the research. But it used to be that you have a publication and then you have all of these things hanging off it, right? And as I said, I couldn't publish my videos with my publication. So I think the new world looks like this. You have a graph of research outputs out there where you can pull on one of these things and I can pull on a researcher and see what grants they got, what institution they're at. And this requires these identifiers. This requires a lot of plumbing in the back ends. And what we want to do for researchers is keep it super simple to make their data available, because not all researchers want to make their data available. You know, it takes time. It's new. I'm already really busy. So we take care of a lot of the boring stuff, I like to say, the plugging in and ticking all the boxes. Will this data always persist? Yes, this data will always persist. But one of the things we realized very quickly is it's great to have a free offering that anybody can use. But at the same time, we have a lot of globally, you have different research environments. You have different people around the world who act in different ways. So I'm in the UK and my funding requirement might be different to someone in Asia or someone in Africa. And what we found was consistent is that research organizations want their data on their home soil. They want that data sovereignty. They want to have a research infrastructure that just works. They are in control of. They are the super administrator, and it plugs into storage on their country. Some countries have it as a law. Some countries just think it's good for their research. And this was something that we were able to do. So we built out these repositories in order to work with institutions where it's a good fit. If you are an organization that has a lot of developers, you might want to build something yourself. There's a lot of great open source tools out there. Just like for the free Figshare, there's also Zenodo or Mendeley Data, other data repositories that you can make your data available for free. But we saw that it was a good fit where we say, the space is moving fast. We will make a thing that's funder compliant for your particular context where you are. And don't let my developers hear me saying that we do all the boring things, because we do some fun things too. You know, we try and encourage researchers to make their data available. One of the ways we do that is whatever format you put your researchers in, you can publish it through an infrastructure like Figshare. We accept any file format. We aim to preview it in the browser. And so this is a great example of a spinny molecule, which, you know, my old PI, if you asked her, my old professor, if you asked her to publish her paper and then the paper says yes and convert all of your images into PNG files for your supplementary material, she just wouldn't submit them because it was too much of a burden. So we want to meet researchers where they are. As we say, we're trying to get researchers to make their data openly available in a way that gets, our tagline is get credit for all of your research. So we want researchers to get credits for all of the outputs that they're generating, not just the papers. Here are some of the boring but important bits. So we are WCAG compliant. That means that if you are blind, you can use the platform still, and it ticks all of those boxes. We plug into different infrastructures around the world. And when I say we want to work with the local context, it really depends who we're working with on at the different country level. So in South Africa, we work with 16 different universities, and we plug into the national billing system called TENET. So they handle all of that. But we also plug into the national single sign-on system. So researchers can come along to their university data repository and make their data openly available. There's a lot of things in there. Data publishing might be new to you. You might be wondering why you should get your researchers to do it. Well, it's good for a few reasons. Impact for them and their careers is one of them, but also it's for the impact of the research from your institution. So if there's a study that came out saying if you make your data available at the same time you publish your papers, it's associated in a 20% increase to citations to the paper. So it's really good for everybody if you make your data openly available. And then for people like me who are no longer at an institution, no longer have access to everything, if it's all open, if it's findable, accessible, interoperable, and reusable, I can find that research, I can build on top of it, my mum can find that research and understand different topics as well. So it's a win-win situation. And in order to make the scale, I think of it as there's two sides to it. There is the technology side to it and the people side to it. And the people side to it is all very much local context. If I go to my library, I want to speak to somebody in my library who understands about this. I don't want to speak to some tech team somewhere. And so we really just handle the technology and we rely on working with communities in order to get that win-win of humans and machines making the best possible outcome. So this is some of the stuff that we take on in doing that. So one thing we do recently is, for the last 8 years we've been doing this, is we try and understand why researchers would make their data available and can we help them, can we help to encourage making their data available? So we do a thing called the State of Open Data every year. It is a survey, a global survey we do in partnership with Springer Nature. And this is some of the information from the 2023 study. So I can tell you about all of the benefits of making data openly available. The researcher benefits, they get more credit. We track views, downloads, citations. So they can get track all of their impact for all of their research outputs. But also, there is an understanding that it's new and I need some help. And what's really interesting about the survey this year, if you look at the data over the last 4 years, it's really been an uptick in what areas, if any, do you feel you need help with in regard to making your research data openly available? Understanding what copyright or license to make my data available has always been up there. Finding the time to manage my data is a growing thing. Understanding data management policies. So this is where I say the people are really important. You can go to the freefigshare.com and make your data openly available. But because it's free, because we do not have, it's not financially, it doesn't make financial sense for us to have a support team. We'd go out of business for helping people curate their data, add the right metadata. The sweet spot is if you have infrastructure, there's other infrastructures, like I say, like DSpace or lots of different types of infrastructure and the people involved who are the experts in the local context. So you may know the data management policies for your local funders. Do your funders say that researchers have to make their data available? If they do, your researchers need help. They don't know this. And finding the time is always going to be a problem. So it's good to be aware of what is happening. What is really interesting is if you look at the how open people are to being open with their research. So there's four different things here. There is making research articles open access should be common scholarly practice. Making research data should be open. Making peer review open and publishing a preprint. And what you can see is it doesn't matter what the subject is. They all follow this pattern that the majority of people say that research papers should be open, and then they think it's data, and then they think it's peer review, and then they think it's preprints. But I think we'll see this wave of a year from now, 80% will think data, 60% will think peer review should be open. And what's really interesting about this is, as you can see in this, there's some differences between the communities. So these are different subjects. So there is a slight difference in between business researchers and arts and humanities researchers in their thoughts. But we've also just recently done some data reanalysis with a group from King's College London with undergraduates, and they started looking at the countries and the different themes for the different countries. And what you find is that Africa is much more open to open. perhaps you have more insight into why this is than I do, but you have countries like Japan, which are less open to open. And in fact, in a lot of the charts that we looked at, Ethiopia comes out on top as the most open to open country that there is. And so I think it's an enormous opportunity for African research to jump on this open research movement, because it's fair for everybody. Everybody gets to reuse all of the information that's published. You can work with organizations like ourselves or like others to ensure that you're ticking all the boxes around data compliance and everything else in your country. And when we ask those same researchers, who'd you go to for help in publishing your data? 41% said publishers, and 38% relied on their institution. So if you are at an institution, you're likely to have researchers come to you as the experts. The reason why they go to publishers is because a lot of people don't think about data publishing until the point at which they go to publish their paper. So if you publish a paper in, say, PLOS, Public Library of Science, when you go to publish your paper, they say, do you have any data available? You need to make it available. Do you have any data with this paper? You need to publish it. And people don't know what that means. So what does that mean? Where do I publish my paper? And so if your institution has a repository that can help researchers make their data available, it means uploading a file, giving it a title, giving it a description, clicking publish, it generates a DOI, and now that is part of the scholarly literature, and it's trackable and citable, and you can get double the impact because you have a paper and a data set. I'd love to see more researchers going to their institution, but it is interesting that these are the two places that they go. So you may have heard me mention before this idea of FAIR data. So this is a great one because FAIR stands for findable, accessible, interoperable, and reusable data. And why that's important is if you think about the funders around the world, they say, we're going to give you some money and you have to publish some papers because we want to see what you did with the money. We want to see your research. We want to move the space forward. And then the biggest return on investment for them right now is to say, hey, you create all this other stuff, preprints, presentations, posters, data sets, all of these other things. We paid for that as well to be that research to be done. Wouldn't it be great if you could make that openly available? And now what they're hoping with the dawn of machine learning, AI, is that we can build on top of the research and move further faster by making data openly available and having the data be available for both human consumption and for the machines. So if you have machines that can read all of the data sets and say, I understand the metadata, then that makes it a great, potentially huge return on investment for the funders and return on investment for the country or the organization from which this research is coming from. And so this is where I say about the people side of things. So findable, accessible, interoperable, and reusable data. I like to think with a free figshare.com or Zenodo or any other repository, if you have some data sets and you put it in the repository, it's usually findable, accessible, interoperable, and reusable for the humans, but maybe just findable and accessible for the machines. The robots don't necessarily know that it's been linked from a paper. And so I might be reading a paper, see there's a data set available, it's described well in the paper, but the robot might just find the data set and say, I don't know what I'm looking at here. It's not well described enough. And this is where you need technology and infrastructure, as well as people. In this case, I think librarians, subject expertise. And that is if you have data sets, some infrastructure, and some people to help hold the hands of the researchers, you can get findable, accessible, interoperable, and reusable data for both humans and for machines. So this is why when we build repositories, this is University of Lincoln, you can see that we have the ability to deposit research or deposit data into the university repository. So this is fantastic for researchers who are looking for a trusted home. And so repositories, if you have one at your university, you should try opening it up for data. You should try opening it up for all these other research outputs, allow the researchers to have more impact, to get more credit, to advance their career. And it's also great for you as a university because you have all of this stuff coming out of your university that you're controlling the release of. When I mentioned the different types of content, we started off being data repositories, but then universities, as I say, researchers generate all different types of content. So this is La Trobe in Australia, and you can see they have open data, open educational resources, open galleries, libraries, museums, open publications, and open theses and dissertations. So they are controlling everything that comes out of the university. They have a copy of everything, and their researchers are getting credit for all of the different things they're making available. Institutions produce a lot of content. We also have started working with different groups to see how things can work well together. As I mentioned, 16 universities in South Africa use Figshare infrastructure. So what we did there was we just added a layer on top and said anything that's published in these 16 repositories will also just show up in this southafrica.figshare.com. And so you have all of the research coming out of South Africa is in one place. You can search through it. It's got full text search. You can make it discoverable in many different ways because there is a lot of content coming out. If you look at this, on the left, it's showing the different types of research that's being published. And if you look at the right, this is showing you, you know, newer things like data sets and preprints. That's just the top of this chart, right? It's a small amount. But back in the year 2000, there was less than 2 million academic outputs a year. Now there's more than 9 million academic outputs a year, of which 2 million of them are data sets and preprints. So it really is a great time for organizations to get hold of their content. That's what repositories can be good for. If you don't have a repository, you should get a repository at your organization to be in control. We've seen what's happened in the past with academic publishers and how they publish your content, make you buy it back, things like this. Universities can be in control of their research outputs, control the level of openness, and dictate what's happening with the outputs they produce. Something that's really interesting is it's really fantastic. In around 2017, we saw that the amount of open access publications was more than the closed access publications, which I love. As I say, I'm not at a university, so I can't read all of this content. But because it's open access, I can. And what I'd like to see more of is gold open access is where you pay to publish. And green open access is the same thing. It's open to everybody, but it's open by me making a copy available of that paper in my institutional repository. And you can see there's a lot more gold open access than green open access. I really think repositories can help us make a much more equitable way of making papers openly available. So we are part of a bigger ecosystem. We do plug into lots of different machines and types of things within your institution. If you have five different systems, we have APIs, we can plug into them. But my colleague Maria is now going to talk about some of this from the African setting. Over to you, Maria.
Thank you, Mark. I'm just going to share my screen as well. Please tell me.
I see it. So you take it away.
Okay, brilliant. So thank you, everybody. I think we have heard a lot from Mark as well. And one of the things that he's mentioned and that we know already is that there is a lot of content out there. So we have looked at some of the trends in African research. And looking at the overall African publication production, according to WIPO, that's the World Intellectual Property Organization, we can identify science and technology clusters in areas by looking at things like high density of inventions and scientific authors, patent filing activity, and publication of scientific articles. That's how most of us look at activity. So we know that there has been a significant growth in the number of publications with an African affiliation in recent years. In the last decade, the publication growth has more than tripled, and you can see that on the first table here, how the graph is going up and up. And if we look into the research of focus in African papers, the top line, that's the yellowish color there, in the second graph, is biomedical and clinical sciences, even more so in the past 3 years or so. And obviously a lot of that is due to COVID research, but then that's followed by engineering, that's the green dots, which research has steadily been growing as well. The production has gone up by 50% in the past 5 years, followed by clinical sciences in purple. So if we look at the acceleration of open science in Africa, it's very important to note that African researchers, and Mark has already mentioned that, are really, really involving themselves with open, even though there might be some regional differences in between the North and Sub-Saharan Africa. And here we can see, and the main point that I want to make is from 2018, the blue line shows that all open access publications start surpassing the closed publications, and this keeps growing. So from 2018 onwards, it's going to be growing and keeps growing at a much higher rate, and is surpassing closed overall. So what does that tell us? Well, that tells us that we need to rely on systems to work with us. And repositories are pillars of the FAIR principles. FICSAIR supports open access and open science by providing researchers, universities, etc., with an open open platform to showcase showcase and preserve research data, enabling global reach, and to make research outputs discoverable in a findable, accessible, interoperable, and reusable way, the FAIR that Mark had been referring to. So I'm going to talk very briefly about some of the initiatives that we've been doing in Africa in the last few years. This is our global reach, and I have put global in small letters, because as you can see in the Global South, we still have quite a few little dots, but not enough, mainly in South Africa. And Mark had referred to that also. I will mention that earlier later, but also in Ghana. Supporting research communities, we have been working to provide an equitable price repository infrastructure, supporting strategic partners in the continent, and contributed through leadership and capacity building. And here's the stuff around South Africa that Mark mentioned earlier. We have been providing quality, affordable data repository infrastructure to South African universities since 2019 via TENET. TENET is an NREN, part of the Ubuntu Net Alliance that Harold works with, a founding partner of the Ubuntu Net Alliance. And we've been working in a consortium with TENET since 2020, providing this affordable data infrastructure to 17 institutions. Here's a page that you can go to where you will see, as in the screenshot shows, all the different institutions that contribute to the data repositories. And also, as Mark mentioned, this community of 17 individual data repositories and growing, because we have some in implementation, so they will be growing. They are sharing a wide range of research data outputs in all disciplines. And we have built an aggregated repository, which we call Discover Research from South Africa, that searches all the individual data repositories together, making South African research data more visible. And here it is, the screenshot, and you saw it earlier as well. So as well as that, we've been partnering with African Archives since early 2020, and being one of the established scholarly repository providers that contribute to African Archive. We will put this presentation in African Archive later, as Mark mentioned, and this is how our part of the African Archive repository looks like. And in May last year, Mark signed a partnership to promote data awareness and participation in Africa in collaboration with the African Library Information Associations and Institutions, AFLIA, which you are probably very familiar with, especially if you are librarians. So there is a QR code in there where you can read in their website about the press release and how what we're trying to do with them. But one of the main things that we're doing, we provided a free conference repository, fixer repository for AFLIA to put together the proceedings of the conferences. So this is how it looks like at the moment. And this is just how it looks like in a screenshot. The proceedings from last year are there, including my paper, I can see there. This is just a coincidence of the screenshot I took. As well as doing the conference repository together, we are contributing thought leadership and capacity building, and we are planning and we will be delivering capacity building programs for librarians and repository managers on open data management, on persistent identifiers, the fair and care principles, and we're working also with GARLIC, the association in Ghana, and other associations around sub-Saharan Africa. And we are also and have been supporting our partners with conference sponsorship. I've been mainly going and speaking and sharing conference sessions, doing workshops, webinars such as this one. And I just put in there some of the countries where we've been in the last 12 months or so. So we were in Botswana and Uganda for UbuntuNet, and we will be coming again this year, hopefully. We've been in South Africa for the World Science Forum for the UNESCO Open Day there, in national conferences in Ghana, in Zambia, in Uganda. So yes, contributing to partners, working together, supporting upskilling of librarians, supporting talking to others and learning about what we can do to contribute together in the field. So I want to talk very briefly about persistent identifiers, because obviously that's the theme of all the webinars, and how Fixer integrates with persistent identifiers to assure discoverability by people and machines, as Mark had explained earlier. So three things I'm going to talk about: DOIs, which are obviously for research outputs, and I'm sure you're all very familiar with that. ORCID for individual researchers, and ROAR for research institutions. So Fixer means it's data site DOI for its output. You can see in there in a screenshot of how it looks like. In Fixer, we mint the DOI, but you are also able to choose and upload a pre-existing DOI if you want to link the data that you have to a publication, for example, that might already have a DOI from the publisher. You can also put a handle if you want. So this is just an example here. But yeah, the main takeaway is everything that you upload in Fixer is given a DOI to identify it. We also link with our author profiles integrate with ORCID. So we also link with ORCID. And this is an example here using my own Fixer profile. So when you set up the profile, it asks you to connect and enable syncing with ORCID, continuing with the screenshot. Once you do that, you are able to configure ORCID, and it tells you whether you can push data from ORCID to Fixer, the other way around, from Fixer to ORCID, and create draft records from the ORCID data. The important bit, I have taken Mark's Fixer profile here and show how it's integrated with his ORCID, and also displays user metrics and collaborators, which is very, very useful to identify for the people that he's working with. And that is for all author profiles that get created in Fixair. So even, you know, if you want to do a Fixair.com account, you can create one for free, as Mark has explained, and create your author profile integrated with your ORCID and pull and push things from there. Also, ROAR, Research Organization Registry. ROAR started in 2019, and we've been working with ROAR. And also, I want to mention that although ROAR was funded as a community-driven initiative, it was mirroring the GRID database, which was started in 2015 by Digital Science, our parent company. So in 2015, Digital Sciences released the Global Research Identifier Database, GRID, which was an open database of unique research-related organizations identifiers. And that had been developed in-house over a number of years for public use by the research community. And then when ROAR started, built on seed data from GRID, and it came off age and started being independent, then Digital Sciences decided to pass on the baton to ROAR and stop doing GRID from the public space. And so the last release of GRID was in 2021, at the end of 2021. And from then we have ROAR. And in here I have a screenshot of how ROAR that works in the background looks like. So I have put two ROARs in there from the metadata, from the taken from an API. And the point in there is the point that Mark was making about the machines, things that are not just findable and accessible to us as humans, but also interoperable and reusable by machines. The last thing I want to talk about before we finish, and I hand over to Mark again, is about Fixair building integrations and open tools. And the first one is the API that Fixair has and makes available to others. And then our built-in integrations with our sister companies, Dimensions and Allmetric. So Fixair plays very well with other systems. We have an openly documented API, and we are also able to plug into discovery layers, preservation systems, CRIS and RIN systems, GitHub, GitLab, notebooks, lots of other systems. We do a lot of integrations, or people can do a lot of integrations, let's say, using Fixair and their systems that they use in universities. We also provide, and this is very, very useful for researchers, use some metrics for discoverability. We use Dimensions Database, which is our sister company as well, to showcase views, downloads, and citations. And you have an example there of an item, how the item displays in Fixair and the user metrics in there. Citations appearing in Fixair are measured using data from Dimensions, as I said. Dimensions is a research information database. It's actually the research information database that indexes more data from more publications, as you said, from Africa and African researchers than any of the other databases you might be using and know of. And the data comes from the full text available from this Dimensions that has more than 80 million papers. And it comes from a number of sources, all the big publishers, including Springer Nature, Taylor Francis, Emerald. And like most citation tracking tools, Dimension only tracks citations on DOIs. So that's why it's super important to have a DOI to start with. Fixair imports the citation data from Dimensions on a weekly basis. So sometimes it appears automatically, but it might be that you see a different citation number. Sometimes the import happens every week. And also it checks for citations that might not have been given to the right what am I trying to say? that it might be erroneous citations and removes them. So then, so the count will change every week sometimes. So then it will pull, if you click on the citation, it will pull the information directly from Dimensions, and you can go into the Dimensions page. That this is open access. It doesn't require any account, any subscription. You just can go directly and see what publications have been cited in your paper. And the same with all metrics. All metrics are alternative metrics, and we also use our sister company, Allmetric, to provide this integration that happens automatically, and it displays in Fixair. So Allmetric data appears on item pages where Allmetric has found the attention. Includes attention on social media, news outlets, patents, policy papers, and more. And again, the users can click, or anybody that is looking at Fixair can click on the Allmetric donut to see whether the items have received attention, and they will be sent again to the Allmetric portal where you have more information and you can see the screenshot in there. So that's all I wanted to share. I just wanted to hand over back to Mark that is going to talk for a couple more minutes about what the future looks like before we open for questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Maria. I just wanted to finish with this concept of, you know, what there's a lot happening. Why is it important? And where do I think we're going? And I think one of the things that is notable is that if you're running a university or you're running your own organization or you're a researcher in an organization, there's so many different tools. There's so many different things that you need to plug into. The nice thing is that you can usually use a single sign-on system and just log in with your user email, your university email and password. And I think for the repository space, you might have had a thesis and dissertation repository, a green open access paper repository, a data repository, an open educational resources repository. And I think what we'll see is just having one system that as the technology has improved, if you can handle videos, you can handle PDFs, it's just files and metadata on the internet with persistent identifiers. The thing I'm really excited about from our side of things in the building the repository space is, can we use AI and machine learning to make things even easier for the researchers? If I upload a video, can the AI, generative AI, tell me what that video is showing me and fill in the form for me? Can it suggest better metadata that I'm using? And then for interoperability and workflows, you might have an institutional repository and you can pull out all of the data in a certain schema, maybe OAI PMH, to pull into the national repository. You want to give them a feed of information, but they only can accept a different type of a feed. I think the generative AI can do that crosswalk of metadata schemas in the future. And then for us, I think the usability has to work for two sets of folks. It has to work for the researcher to make it as easy as possible. They're busy. They just need this simple solution with some help from the admins, with some help from the librarians. But also we need to make tools that work well for the librarians. You can't have a nice fancy thing for the researchers and then the back end when I'm trying to, you know, set it up as a library or see the metrics for my internal presentation that I need to show my boss. We can't have the system looking bad there as well. So I think usability for both admins and users is always important for us. And then finally, I just want to talk on the final slide, which is this one. What does the future look like? And I don't have the answer here. I'm just going to leave you with this. I mentioned that with data being made available, I feel that a lot of the low-hanging fruit in research has been grabbed, right? So how can we use the machines to think along with us and query all of the data and look for new trends to help us move further faster? But I think the machines are going to consume and generate new academic content. We're going to help them do that. But we also need to clean it up. We also need good metadata. What I was saying before about
is the metadata good enough? We have people using the free Figshare, trying to make their data findable, accessible, interoperable, and reusable. And they give the data set the title dataset. Your title should be as descriptive as possible. Think about how you'd write a title for a publication. And so if you call your dataset, it's not findable. If you go to Google now and search for dataset, I'm not going to find your dataset. You should give it the descriptive title, the role of so-and-so in this. So I think we need to use the machines to help us curate and clean the academic content before the machine we start relying on the new information. So I just wanted to leave that as a thought point. I think Africa has a great opportunity to build on top of the data that they are generating from within your universities, from within your institutions. And I think it's always good to leave food for thought. So that's everything from us. Thank you, Harold.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mark and Maria. Maybe before we open it up to the audience and in the chat, I've seen one question in the chat, or actually two. But before I open it up to them, in the interest of time, just quickly, Mark, you mentioned something about Africa being the most open continent, or rather in your data, is that something that you noticed? So just like two questions. How does Figshare work alongside other similar services globally, and particularly in Africa, and also especially on the Africa being more open? What are some features that have made Africa stand out as a user base compared to the rest of the world?
Yeah, so great questions. I think firstly, what I will say is, in answer to the question about why is Africa in general more open than, say, Asia, and why is Ethiopia in particular the most open of all of the countries, as somebody who lives in England, I was hoping that somebody on the call may have more of an idea than I will, because it's all about that local knowledge. And I did. I spoke to somebody from Ethiopia recently, and they mentioned, oh, we've got this new policy from the government around open research. And it was like, oh, that's probably got a thing to do with it, right? So we always think there's global and there's local infrastructure, and you need both. So when we talk about what we plug into, you mentioned, I see a question here as well, is where we get our DOIs from. So we do partner with DataCite for our DOIs. I'm on the board at DataCite, so very clued up with what's happening there. But it's your DOIs, right? We mint them on your behalf, but you can take them with you if you move on to another system. We also plug into ORCID. We plug into these raw, as Maria mentioned, these global things. But then there's also the local things as well. So there is one area where we don't use DataCite DOIs. In Japan, one organization we work with there, they have their own local DOIs. I know there's a movement for an African PID system. If that gets established to a point where we can integrate with it, of course, we're going to integrate with that, right? Because there's this local and global infrastructure level. But why researchers in Africa tend to be more open is something that we can see in the survey itself. You know, do you think it would be good to have a funder mandate in your country for open research and open data? Africa comes out high. As I said, Ethiopia comes out a lot higher than, say, North America, where they already have mandates. So I don't have the answer to why that is, because I think a lot of it is going to be local knowledge. And we only establish that by working locally with organizations and coming to the different organizations and going to conferences and speaking to people and them telling us what's happening.
No, yeah, that's very true. I think that's a fair point to make. I think platforms like this do provide also a good channel to try and discuss and try and find out why that is the case. Perhaps, like you said in your presentation, it's very important to take advantage of it rather than, dealing with why that's the case. That's also, besides the point, perhaps. But Maria, what are the goals that Figshare seeks to achieve with regards to serving the African community in the year of 2024? And also, While you answer that, you should also go on to answer the question, how can the African community become more involved, which I think is something that is part of the question that Mrs. Dorothy Enea has asked in the chat as well. But yeah, can you please expand more on that?
Yes, thank you, Harold. So I have been in Fixer exactly 2 years. Tomorrow it will be 2 years, actually. And as you say, Africa is one of the country, the territories where I work, not the only one. I work for Fixer in all to expand all the global reach in territories where we haven't been before. But I've been working really hard to be seen, to be working in active and generally in collaboration and partnership with you colleagues in Africa. So that's why I've been going there, contributing to conferences, always, you know, sponsoring if we can, but always contributing to conference, presenting papers, putting paper proposals forward, contributing to the thought leadership and listening as well. Not just contributing by actively talking, but also listening, going there to observe who the players are, what the needs are. And I will continue doing that in 2024. So continue creating relationships, trusted relationships. I've also been advocating a lot for Africa in particular, around the barriers that I have seen and that others have told me are there in between us for genuine collaboration and supporting policies to grow Fixer in Africa. And I know affordability is a barrier, so we have created equitable pricing. So there's a structure that supports us with prices where we build repositories for an equitable price in Africa. I will continue, as I said, trying to listen to people. So what can the community do is invite us to attend and support conferences and events that you are holding, invite us to webinars like these, tell us what your needs are and continue the dialogue. So I put our emails at the end of the presentation there for a while. And somebody just says, you just answered my question. I don't know. I hope that's the question I am, but perhaps it's the question around where do we share this. But yeah, for me, it's very much about continuing the dialogue. Both Mark and I are here to listen as well as to talk and to understand more how can we contribute. As we mentioned, there is a very active community in South Africa. So also some of them are on the call, and also I can see the names of other colleagues we're actively speaking to and working with in Ghana. And we will start tomorrow. I have a call first thing in the morning with Ethiopia. So it's like talking to people, understanding what sort of repositories they need and what other support they need from us. So that's exactly what I wanted to say. Thank you.
Yes, Mark, I see you unmuted. Is there something you wanted to add?
I was just going to say that, you know, we can all try as much as we can, and it takes a lot of work to be present in as many places as you can be, right? And so I saw somebody asking previously about like how the good thing about working in for a tech company is you can it doesn't matter where you are, right? As I tell my mom, we work on the internet, right? So I am in London, but when we started doing work in South Africa, we hired local people in South Africa. We've got folks in Australia. We've got folks in North America. And I think it's got to be this kind of like working locally to understand how the local, in a particular country, what the rules are, what the regulations are, and having that local expertise. I think during COVID, you know, I lost a lot of my knowledge of what was going on because I see people on the call here in countries I've not yet been to. So as Maria was saying, we're always happy to come and chat, or if you're ever in London, please do give us a shout.
Yeah, definitely. And just as well, we're almost out of time, but I think we can just add 3 minutes just to address the questions in the chat. But yes, Maria, definitely your presence in Africa is actually felt, and I can attest to that as well, because even last year you were one of the sponsors for the regional annual conference for Ubuntu Netherlands, where a lot of engagement was. So definitely your presence is felt. Maybe just to go into the chat quickly. Yes, I said Mrs. Dorothy Nair asked, she needs more information on repository hosting. What conditions are required for a repository to be hosted by Figshare?
So Mrs. Dorothy should contact me and we can have a conversation personally. We provide repositories for institutions and we need to understand the needs, the type of institution, how big the institution is to be able to have a bigger conversation, the country where you are. And I will be very happy to speak to you. So if you're still on the call, please feel free to email me at maria@figshare.com or I will try to find you. But we don't have a one size fits all. We build repositories for different institutions, from national repositories to very small institutions, to research institutes, to all sorts. So I need to have a conversation with you on your requirements.
Okay. Thank you for that. And also finally, this is actually quite a several questions. Thank you very much, Tekleweni. I hope I got that correct. But has several questions. Who is responsible for assigning DOIs for Figshare repositories? I hope you keep up, Maria or Mark. So that's the first one. Who is responsible for assigning DOIs? With whom is Figshare partnership? Data site or Crossref, which is pretty much the same question. Why Africa is more open than Japan? I think, Mark, you covered that already. How Figshare planned to build capacity in research workflow in Africa, East Africa, and Ethiopia in particular? So you want to take that either, Mark or Maria?
Yeah, I just want to touch on it. Maria already mentioned she's got a call with Ethiopia tomorrow. We're always trying to build bridges. We're always trying to make friends. We're always trying to get to events, and that's where it starts, right? We need to come in, or we need to have a conversation with somebody who's local who understands what's going on. I want to give a big shout out to Tekleweni, because if you don't know, Data Site already is fantastic not for profit DOI infrastructure provider. We mint DOIs on behalf of organizations there. And I'm sure Tekleweni is a very well networked person if they are working, volunteering at Data Site. So we haven't met yet. I look forward to meeting you soon.
Maria, anything to add on that?
No, I think that Mark has also mentioned the bit about why Japan and Africa. Mark has been working on the research, but actually the reasons why, I don't know exactly why. I think that we'll have to go to these countries to find out.
Yeah, we'll find out. Well, I mean, it's hard to, you know, you can hypothesize and you can come up with ideas, but until you've got the facts, you don't know. I know that Japan has very strict rules on IP. It could be something that they're scared because they don't want to break any IP laws, but this is where training and education it'll hinder them in the short term if they don't get educated on the benefits of open in the long term.
Yeah, I mean, definitely the reasons could be so vast. You'd also have to look at things like culture and all those things. So I think, yeah, that is such a deeper question. But yes, I think with the interest of time, in order to avoid to go beyond time too much, allow me to thank you, Maria and Mark. This was truly a very educational webinar, and thank you so much for making the time. And I'm pretty sure that some conversations will also follow from this webinar. And also thank you to everybody who took the time to participate. I'm sure it was very educational, and I'm sure we'll also have you in the upcoming webinars in the webinar series. So thank you so much. You can be able to get the details of the webinar series on Ebuka. Can you please post the link in the chat as well, so that maybe people can follow that up? But it's available on the Africa Archive website. So yes, thank you very much. Our next webinar session is on the 7th of March, with Nokutula Mchunu, yeah, of Africa Open Science Platform, AOSP, yes, as our guest speaker. So please plan to attend that 7th March. And yes, we'll see you then. Thank you so much, everybody, and have a lovely evening. Thank you.
Thank you, Harold. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Thank you.